Hello, mead friends. Welcome to the Regenerative Mead Podcast. I'm your host, Brando Tice, and today Frank and I sit down to talk about the concept of a regenerative business. We start off the conversation with where the concept stemmed from for Frank when he was starting Golden Coast Mead, and then talk about Carol Sanford's book, The Regenerative Business. We then get into our personal experiences with applying the regenerative concepts in her book to our day-to-day lives as we go about our work. Now let's get into it.
Hey everyone, here at Golden Coast Mead, we consider drinking alcohol not only a luxury, but a celebration of life. If you partake in this celebration, we advocate for drinking regenerative mead made from real honey to help shift the $1.5 trillion alcohol industry in a better direction. When you drink our regenerative mead, you are helping to make the earth healthier, more biodiverse, and abundant. Drop monoculture-based booze and drink regenerative mead. Visit our website, www.goldencoastmead.com, to learn more about our regenerative mead business and be a part of the celebration. Cheers.
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 You know what's funny about that?
Mm.
I'm going to call myself out on editing right now.
Okay.
I listened to a full podcast, and you end your promo with cheers, and then we immediately start each episode with cheers. So it's like a double cheersing. Everyone hears. Sorry, guys. We're just very cheery over here.
That's right. We got a lot of cheering to do. I mean, it's true. We practice regenerative business around here.
That's very true. And where did we start our regenerative business adventure?
Man. So back in 2010, before Golden Coast Mead started, I wrote a little mission statement essay about what we set out to do. And in that essay, I said, we want to be part of the regenerative effort to change the food system in our region and by extension, the United States. So
where did you hear that from? Like, where did that concept stem from?
Yeah,
for that paper?
I think I first heard about it through Joel Salatin.
Okay.
And Joel Salatin is a regenerative beef and chicken farmer in Swope, Virginia.
Gotcha.
And he's kind of famous because when the world was getting crazy with centralized animal feeding operations, CAFOs, right, which is like where the majority of foodborne illness comes from, is like these giant factory farms where humans have to wear hazmat suits and the amount of animal waste that gets produced becomes like toxic pollution, and it's just a big mess. And he was small farmer raising a family and doing really well economically because he was doing these chicken tractors and having his chickens follow his cows. So the cows would move into one pasture and then the chickens would go into the pasture that the cows had just left, and they'd go through all the droppings of the cows and eat all the insects. So there was like no flies on this property. And the chickens throw the cow manure everywhere, so it turns into compost. And then the chickens themselves are like grinding up rocks in their gizzards, and so it's converting rocks into silica. And so it's like this incredible way to build soil. And he talks about like plots of land where they were farming where there wasn't even enough topsoil to bury a stake in the ground to make their plots. But over the course of 2 years, they ended up building like 8 inches of topsoil on these places.
Jeez.
So they can heal whole farms that had been totally denuded of topsoil by just having rotational grazing, beef and then chickens.
Jeez.
Yeah, super cool. So he talks about regenerative agriculture as the step beyond sustainable, that sustainable is just something we can keep doing. But what the world needs, if we're going to, you know, have a chance at solving climate change and biodiversity loss and farmers' income loss, we've got to regenerate soil through regenerative agriculture.
Gotcha.
And so we wanted to be a part of that solution back in 2010. And that then led us to looking into permaculture, which is this idea of a permanent agriculture. So there's kind of a joke within like the anthropology world. If you want to go conquer a country, send in the armies. But if you want to destroy a country, send in the farmers. And
you erode the land, essentially.
Yeah. If you look at like the cradles of civilization, you know, the Caucasus Mountains and the Transoxiana, like Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, like these places are denuded because agriculture has been done there continuously for like 3,000, 4,000 years. And now it's just like a desert.
That doesn't speak well for a lot of the world.
No, it doesn't. But there are some cases of hope. The Lust Plateau is one of those cases in China. It's a river valley that was one of the cradles of civilization as well. And over the last 10 years, the Chinese government has undertaken this huge effort to terrace and replant this place into a perennial food production ecosystem. And so they paid a lot of cheap labor, which is something we might not have so much access to in the United States, but they, over the course of a few years, totally transformed this dusty river valley into a really profoundly productive food ecosystem.
Oh, wow.
And the people are super healthy and the revenues that are coming through are much higher. So it's definitely a story of hope within the like large scale agricultural repair.
Okay, I don't want to sidetrack you, but the Sahara Desert, North Africa, my understanding of that is kind of the same story. It's just been completely depleted. But from what you just told me, there's a chance of recovering the Sahara Desert if it's done properly, or is that, am I missing the point?
So the Sahara Desert is a huge desert, and yeah, apparently Carthage denuded it, right? Like 2000 plus years ago, they cut it all down for war, use. And as a result, it turned into a desert and now is just a dune sea. But there's a guy named Neil. What's Neil's last name? Insert last name here. Neil is a specialist on regenerating desert ecosystems. So it's pretty wild. He's had some pretty good success in the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, taking like these wadis, is my understanding. They're these kind of old wash, like river basins, like when it does rain, torrential downpours, there are these kind of washed landscapes called wadis. And he's been like building these earth berms and planting the right plants, which then establish a little bit of a water cycle. And within a few years, I think he's had some serious success about establishing functional food producing ecosystems in places that were literally just dust bowls. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. So permaculture is super cool. And we got turned on to this group called Terra Genesis. These guys who are all permaculture designers and gals, guys and gals who are all permaculture designers, and they were starting to really implement big picture changes, like not just one small farm at a time, but like, how can we create networks of farms that all practice the same thing so they could have large scale positive ecological impact, and then have business models that took advantage of economies of scale to some extent and aggregated distribution and aggregated marketing so that they could reach developed markets where premiums were being paid, and then get those funds back to these farms to expand this work.
Mm-hmm.
So we were pretty inspired by these guys, and turns out they all had the same teacher, who's Carol Sanford.
Oh, okay.
And so we were like, okay, well, who do you guys learn from? And they're like, could check out Carol Sanford. And when we did, it was like, oh, permaculture and regenerative up to this point has been a series of like prescriptive approaches, you know. I mean, permaculture has this wonderful ethos and these core principles, but Carol boils that down to essence and this idea that we all have a unique essence and each place has a unique essence and each group of humans doing anything together has a unique essence. And it's only when we match essences and work together to expand our ability to express our essence, that's regeneration. So like, it's a kind of philosophical and big picture approach to what can be a very pragmatic practice. But I think when that piece is in place, it empowers everybody in an organization to kind of understand what we're doing here, which is like finding our gifts and sharing them and figuring out how to share them better and how to pair with other people to share gifts in a way that could never be shared before. And so we picked up this book called The Regenerative Business
by Carol Sanford.
That's right. And we all have a copy on the team and we all use it now to understand how to operate this business and liberate ourselves from kind of the top-down hierarchy model. And instead, like, everyone thinks like a CEO here. Everyone is a leader. Everyone is showing up every day to figure out how they can match their essence with the essence of Golden Coast Mead and then anticipate our customers' hopes and expectations with offerings that are going to help our customers unfold and express their essence and evolve. So it's super exciting stuff. And I think I talked for 10 minutes straight.
You might have. And that's okay. But before we dive into the book, what's a little history on Carol Sanford? Where did she come from? What's her story?
Yeah, Carol's super cool. So she's a business consultant and she's been doing it since the 70s. But she worked at Procter & Gamble. She might have been doing it since the late 60s, actually. So she went to Berkeley. She studied with some of the, like, luminaries of the day. Pretty sure she knew Buckminster Fuller personally and studied with folks who studied with Carl Jung. And then she went to work for Procter & Gamble in South Africa, working with Crest, which, you know, is the toothpaste company. And an example that she gives at her lectures often is how this idea of essence to essence matching. So they looked at that. What is the essence of Crest? And it's oral health. And what's the essence of South Africa? And it's community wellness. So how can you, or community in South Africa, how can you combine these two essences? Well, oral health and community, there's an opportunity to increase the wellness of a community by delivering oral health using these community aspects. And like, this was during apartheid when people were leaving and businesses were leaving South Africa and it was getting kind of chaotic, but they developed a business model where their sales and distribution plan was to work with unemployed mothers, because there were a lot of them at the time, on a block by block basis and sell them toothpaste, which they would then go and retail to their community members by the toothpaste capful for like a few shillings. So it was affordable to the neighbors and it expanded just by adding people who managed blocks of toothpaste sales mothers. So they like came up with this totally unique solution that helped their customers in a way that nothing else could have. And she just uses that as one example of what she's done. And she's worked with, you know, Google and Apple and Pixar. Those are just some of the stories that I've heard from her, but she has a long and well-recognized track record of success, and she's a really cool lady. I mean, she really wants to see everyone that she works with succeed and find their essence and share it with the world.
Yeah, and she came out with the Regenerative Business book in 2020? Or was it before that?
2017.
Yeah. And in the book, she kind of distills everything she's learned for the past 40 to 50 years and kind of puts it into a book for anyone to use if they choose to or not.
And everything she teaches, you know, this, these are the, in this book, Regenerative Business, are all the criteria and practices that help evolve from a kind of top-down hierarchical approach where people are interchangeable to a regenerative approach where everyone is showing up to share the thing that they can do so that the organization can do thing that no, do things that no other organization can do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty transformational book. It's a lot to take on, even though it's delivered in just a couple hundred pages, not even. It's 168 pages with notes. So it's not a big book, but we've been taking it 1 month at a time, working through one aspect of each criteria. And I'd say it's like been huge in helping us all show up to do what we're here to do in a unique and evolutionary way. And I feel like it's transformed our business culture from top down command and control kind of, you know, legacy operating to collaborative, creative, self-initiating, internal locus of control, to use one of her words, which is like critical to having a good life, is understanding that your life is a result of your actions and choices.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want your life to improve or change, then it's up to you to make those changes.
Yeah. And I think what you're calling out there in the book is she calls it source work design from first principles and not through comparison, which a lot of people do, or analogy. And she gives different criterias for working through first principles. And the three criteria she gives in the book is eternal locus of control, external considering, and personal agency. And then within those three criterias, she even dives deeper into them. So like, what is internal locus of control? She says it's reflective self-accountability, it's inner aims, it's non-attached integrity. What is external considering? It's will to create, it's engaged caring, it's core discernment. What is personal agency? It's nodal realization, it's promises beyond ableness, and self-efficacy. So she like really dives into what does it mean to do work design from first principles instead of analogous work designs. And it's something that like really makes you think about just every aspect of what you're doing in your day to day. Ultimately, like it just makes you think, oh, this has been ingrained in me that it should be done this way. And it's kind of like, maybe not. Maybe I should be doing it another way. Maybe I should speak up here and just tell someone my opinion. Maybe I should like
grow in that ability to do that thing that I feel like needs to be done here.
Mm-hmm. Rather than someone telling me that's what I need to do.
Yeah. Or like, she has a number of examples in the book where she talks about kind of the toxic or self-compressing practices that exist in conventional work culture, where like you're always kind of checking out what the leader is subtly communicating to folks instead of like, no, this is my attachment to the truth. And in this moment, I feel called to say this, and it doesn't matter how I am perceived or how I perceive myself being perceived by others. What matters is my sense of integrity, because the whole system relies on each of us showing up with our sense of integrity intact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just so liberating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no sense of office politics or striving for positioning. It's instead showing up to do and be what you know is best and right.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I like most about it is it's a focus on the humanity of what business is. And I feel like a lot of times I don't want to generalize businesses, but mostly it's about money. And I think you need to run a good business and you need to be making money to pay your employees. And money is definitely a consideration, but a lot of people don't also focus on the human development and the human aspect of everyone that's involved in the transactions that they're making.
Totally.
And I think she focuses a lot on the humanness of it and just the internal human parts of everybody within the business and how that is just as important as everything else.
Yeah. In fact, it's the fundamental building block of any organization because it's made up of humans. Mm-hmm. And if those people are suppressed and compacted, then the whole culture is going to be disabled.
Yeah. You're shooting yourself in the foot if you aren't really considering it.
Yeah.
And I just think she brings to light and puts to words a lot of things that when you start to think about it, it's kind of like, oh yeah, that makes way more sense than like how it's been taught to me or how I've absorbed the information before.
Right.
Another big part of the book is she's really big on innovation, and she essentially says you want to make it so innovation isn't optional within your work culture, because innovation is how you become more and more successful within your given industry. And in order to be innovative, you need to have certain criteria for growing that culture. And so the three criteria she gives for innovation are change accelerator, developmental infrastructure, and initiative activation, right? Yeah. And yep. So even within those three, she breaks it down again into like, okay, so what is change accelerator? It's generative parameters, it's significant evaluations, it's evolutionary strategies. And she dives into those three and defines them and gives examples of them. And then same with developmental infrastructure, it's resource roles, it's self-directed work plans, it's regular developmental events. In initiative activation, she defines it as responsible financial measures, structured work progression, and buyer-focused field teams. So she just breaks it down to a step-by-step process on like, hey, here's how you create an innovative culture, and here's how you like differentiate yourself within your given market, essentially.
And I think they build on each other. Like you pointed out earlier today at our team meeting how nodal interventions and evolutionary strategies, like without nodal interventions and understanding what a node, a way to like, so they use the analogy of, or she uses the analogy of acupuncture, that there are like these points where if you apply some pressure, it'll unlock a whole system. And so understanding that there are these nodes in human psyches and culture, and if you intervene in just the right place in the right way, you can transform a whole system. Then the evolutionary strategy is looking at what is this customer asking to become? What are their dreams, hopes, aspirations? How can we meet them where they're going with an offering that nodally unlocks their next way of being?
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's just so rad. It feels so empowering. It feels like your work is never going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can always help people unlock and unfold to the next level.
Yeah, help people become a better version of themselves. And in order to understand like evolutionary strategies, you need to have the concept of what a node is and nodal realization. So the criteria does grow and work off of each other, and it's all very interchangeable.
Mm. Interconnected.
Interconnected, yes.
So yeah, yeah.
My bad.
That's okay.
Interconnected.
Just keeping you honest.
Yeah. And it's actually, it's a really cool thing to be a part of. And it's a really, for me, it's a new way to look at business. And it's an exciting way to understand like, hey, business can be different. It doesn't have to be this life draining.
Punch the card, yeah. Get paid, do it again.
Yeah, kind of environment. That's not, it doesn't need to be that way.
It's not what we're here to do.
And like, it's exciting to be a part of it and like, I don't know, just develop and work with everyone on the team on like trying to make it become more real for everyone.
Yeah. Cheers to that.
Cheers.
Make it more real.
Did we say what we were drinking? We're drinking the second batch of Mineola Mead, right?
Yeah, we're pretty excited. We've got a second batch of Mineola Sunshine Rain from our friends at Edge of Urban. They're Mineolas. Edge of Urban Farm, which I would argue is a regenerative small farm.
Yeah.
They're super cool. They've been farming in San Diego County since the 70s. Scott Murray, the dad, is a legend around here. And his daughter Lily gave us a tour last week and posted a video about the tour, and a podcast was recorded at their site. So now we are drinking the fruits of our labors, which is our sweet mead mixed with the Mineola juice. And it is clean and bright and citrusy.
Yeah, Frank risked his life to pick some of these Mineolas.
That's right, man.
You got up there pretty high.
I was channeling my grandfather in his apple picking days.
Pretty worried about you.
Yeah, this is delicious. It's juicy and sweet and citrusy. There's a richness to it from the honey and a balance with the acidity and a little bit of that grapefruit cross, because Mineola is a cross between tangerines and grapefruits.
Yeah, there's definitely that bitterness, that like grapefruit bitterness, but in a pleasant way.
Yeah, the bitterness of the grapefruit gives it this backbone that the sweetness and the acidity really dance with. And then the alcohol is just this mild, warm, refreshing presence.
Yeah. Mm. So I think my question to you, getting back to regenerative businesses, you worked a lot of years at GCM before you implemented this.
Yes.
And now you've been doing it for 6 months.
Yep.
6, 8 months. What, in your mind, what's like the biggest difference you see personally and with the teams when before you started to do this book and then the past 16 months?
Great question, man. So for me, the biggest change over the last 6 months since implementing the book is the sense that the team is self-organizing. And when I was CEO for 8-9 years, it was stressful because I felt like I had to direct everyone's activity. And when something got stuck, it was on me to work with the team to figure it out. And so it really set like a cap on our growth because our capacity was limited by my capacity. Mm-hmm. And now that we've got this program in place and there's a total shift from top-down leadership to everybody is key to making success happen, and everyone is empowered to figure out what is getting in their way and how to move through it so that their success can be our success, and the company's success is dependent on all of us growing and our capacity to help the company succeed. It's like a totally different company. It's like we make the same product and we're still as passionate and joyful about it, but it's not the stressful, overwhelming experience that it used to be.
That's good. So like you feel like it's way less stressful and there's more self-initiative and self-accountability throughout
the team, and a sense of mutual leadership that we're all showing up every day to make this thing more and more successful in its mission. And we're all owning that. Like Gary said it recently, you know, running the farmers markets teams, he's regularly thinking like a CEO and what's going to be the best return and the best accomplishment of mission in a given situation. And we totally trust him and his ability to make those decisions. And if he gets stuck, like we're always available as resources for him. But ultimately, like his part of the business is his to run.
Yeah.
And Micah in the tasting room, she's doing the same thing. Like how many times is she on her own? But because she's thinking this way and is supported this way, she succeeds in that when it gets unknown.
Yeah. And I think that's super important and like a core part of like Carol Sanford is just like letting people be the best versions of themselves, and like everyone's there to support everyone else and them trying to be the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
And it's a really freeing aspect of it that I don't know. It's just, I think it's more rare in the workforce to experience it now than it is common, but we would hope it would be more common in the future.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we're definitely living in interesting times, But my hope is that as a culture, we move in this direction more and more.
Yeah, amen to that.
All right, that's a wrap on being a regenerative business. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us. We appreciate all the support we can get. If there's anything you would like to know more about, feel free to email us at podcast@goldencoastmeat.com with your questions, and we'll try to answer them to the best of our ability for you. Now, here's your weekly bee joke. What would bears be without bees? Just ears. Meat out.